Welcome back to Three Decades of Tragedy, History of the 30 Years' War. So last time we covered the bad fortune of the Swedes, who were initially pushed back to northern Germany, well, further into northern Germany, but the army managed to maneuver themselves to save themselves, reaching safety. The Imperials then put a cordon around the Swedish territory in northern Germany, taking back some major cities, with a lack of numbers and unwillingness to attack or difficulty in attack, as well as the new treaty between France and Sweden raising the morale of the Swedes, more men showing up, allowing them to break the cordon and take back some of the territory they lost. And on the financial side, the Imperials were running a major deficit. Their numbers, money, and troop-wise were going down, going back to the old model of finances due to the new model set up by Wallenstein showing cracks and having issues. Old issues then popped back up due to Wallenstein's method fixing some of those old issues. But like I said last time, it wasn't like Wallenstein's methods were going well at that point. There was a lot of issues at the time too. So the Imperials were effectively stuck in a rock and hard place as they couldn't get the numbers that Wallenstein could raise or afford it. But with that covered, let's get started. With the losses and status of the Imperial Army by 1638, Bernhard knew he had to make a move. Moving out of Mumpelgard, he found an alternate way to cross the Rhine through Swiss territory along Lake Constance. He could avoid the Black Forest, but his main issue was his lack of forces, even if he had been joined by an ally over the winter. Rheinfelden was held by a garrison of 500 men, along with other garrisons in the area along the river. Bernhard needed a base past the Black Forest to use the resources of Württemberg and the Danube Valley to help support his troops. Bernhard, however, had a good intelligence network and a man named Colonel Erlach in his service, who had served at White Mountain, had been with Mansfield and the Dutch till 1627, and had served in the canton of Bern till 1637, joining Bernhard after May. Erlach had been able to keep him well supplied, which is essential for any army, as an army runs on its stomach, along with other stuff like gunpowder, bullets, clothing, the whole nine yards. Erlach led a negotiation with Major Widerhold, who was one of the last remaining holdouts in Württemberg at the fortress of Hohentwiel. While he wasn't a major leader in terms of Bernhard or Bonaire, he was a good representation of the local partisan leaders that were patriotic heroes of the regions they were in. They couldn't threaten the Imperials like big armies could, but they could access support in case their allies came back in. They also raided and hurt supply lines, which could do more damage than anyone could expect, and they were often small enough that they were hard to really fight off because they can move fast enough. There were many others who acted in a similar way on both sides, and they were often hard to control and often chafed under the control of big armies, but they grew followings due to their usually humble backgrounds and having to earn their status as a leader and proving themselves, even if they never had large armies under their command. So while they wouldn't really be listed under, like, famous figures of a war, they'd be famous figures in a certain area of the German or Austrian territory. Men and women like this have always existed throughout history, and have always been pivotal to some degree, especially during guerrilla wars, which, honestly, most of the commanders in the first years of the war on the rebelling side, so the Protestants, would probably fit in this category when you look back at it from the perspective of the Swedish or the Danish army when they fought. The war expanding this much over 15 years or more really puts the first part of the war into perspective. Erlach was still under the command of the Duke of Württemberg, but acted on his own objectives, raiding longer distance Catholic towns, and often sparing those closest to his strongholds, which realistically is important because you don't want to make them angry at you. By the end of 1638, he had around 1,000 men and 61 guns, which is small by an army standards, but for raiders is very threatening. He often gathered intel from friendly villagers who joined in looting and plundering, especially if they did not like their neighbors. It sounds kind of shitty to do to your neighbors, but desperate times can do things for people, and on top of existing rivalries and feuds, that could probably convince people to join this army. So I get why they probably joined, but it still probably wasn't a good look if from your neighboring village. And even when he died, he left the poor a large amount of money, which only reinforced his status as a folk hero. He was reported to have caught the Bishop of Constance and stole his horse, and then captured a war chest at Balingen, getting $20,000 in the process. But even though he had been raiding throughout this time period, he was being blockaded by Imperials since Dordlingen and had agreed to stay neutral in the war, although his raiding continued, which frustrated the Imperials. He reduced a little due to the potential of the Peace of Prague and Württemberg being part of the amnesty deal, but even as the Duke accepted the term, he refused, siding with Bernhard and being a constant pain for the Habsburgs even up to 1650, even raiding into Tyrolean lands. Not gonna lie, he sounds kind of awesome, especially since that implies he hit the Austrian lands in the process too, or at least Austrian inheritance. So, you know, even if he wasn't a major player, he certainly annoyed them enough. But back on the New Rhine campaign, with supplies secured and intelligence gathered, Bernhard advanced across at Basel with 6,000 men and 14 guns on January 28th, 1638. Not a lot of men and guns, but he had the element of surprise as he attacked the garrison at Rheinfels. They resisted, both sides settling in for a siege as Bernhard could not advance past them. He had limited resources, so he established a siege works on the southern bank of the river, two regiments of cavalry blocking the gatehouse and bridge. Another infantry regiment was poised to block the Laufenburg Bridge upstream, and four cavalry regiments secured the ferry at Bogen. Wirth realized Rheinfels needed to be relieved and convinced another commander to loan him men, giving him around 2,400 infantry and 4,500 cavalry. They rushed as fast as they could without guns or excess supplies, which was risky in the middle of winter. They reached the area of Bogen by February 28th, but were blocked by dragoons, so they were unable to deploy, so they were forced to take a longer, more difficult route along the river, traveling along the road. This would take a couple of hours, so Bernhard took advantage of this to ferry 600 musketmen and 8 light guns, along with concentrating his cavalry to the north of the town to move to the high ground. The cavalry attacked the Imperials as they tried to deploy again, throwing back the Bavarians, but left two officers mortally wounded, and Erlach was captured in the process. Imperial infantry then took the heights, and Bernhard used the cover of night to retreat eastward, taking advantage of the darkness to hopefully avoid pursuit or delay it, leaving behind 3 or so guns. He had lost around 150 men, but the Imperials did not pursue, as they had forced march to reach them in the winter, and they were exhausted, they were low on supplies, they needed to break, they needed to... Well, they didn't need to break, they needed to take a break, which is intelligent at the time, I will say. I don't think it was an error in the same way that it was... It was an error, but it made sense logically why they would stop. The Citadel Bernhard and his men to regroup, as their retreat was orderly and not a rout. They weren't beaten, which left the Protestants and Bernhard to be able to attack again. He regrouped around Laufenburg, which was 14 kilometers upstream of Rheinfelden. The rest of his army joined him on March 2nd, and instead of pulling back or any other move like that, he decided to take a risky gamble and advance back towards the city along the northern bank to Bogen. He even managed to recover 3 of his cannons that left behind. He was spotted by the picket lines of the Imperials by 7 a.m. on March 3rd, but Bernhard had advanced fast enough that the Imperials were already under attack by the time they formed up their lines, as stated by the Imperial commander Savelli. Quote, "Before we had got our people together, the first had already been shot dead," unquote. So, the situation wasn't good, and Bernhard's infantry advanced in good order, opening fire with the salvo at half range with artillery support. The cavalry covered the flanks and charged the Imperials. The Imperials getting a salvo off, but they were charged in their defensive ditch as they were loaded, which caused the men to break en route. The cavalry saw this and tried to retreat, but some of them taking off their armor to lighten themselves, and the Imperial commander Wirth committing to a last stand with the best Bavarian infantry regiment, but in the end, he was forced to surrender, 500 men getting killed and 3,000 getting captured in total. Not just his regiment, but the entire army. Both the Imperial commanders were captured, and Bernhard reveled at capturing Savelli, who had heavily denounced him as a traitor, and he especially enjoyed as the two commanders blamed each other for the defeat. Savelli managed to escape thanks to a woman who brought him food aiding him, but she was caught along with 7 others and were executed. Which, harsh, but standard at this point. And while this seems bad for the French and Bernhard, this wasn't as bad as it looked, because he was actually a liability to the Imperials due to being promoted thanks to his court connections and not his skill. The other generals and leaders he captured were much more valuable, actually being skilled, and they were exchanged as hostages in future years. This showed the officer corps of the Imperials, as the best commanders were often the most efficient and able to maintain the discipline of an army, and people who just got promoted due to political connections were often losing battles and such. It was a temporary thing, as they were exchanged eventually, but stuff like this can turn the tide of a war or battle for a year or two, at a minimum. Overall, this battle was a smaller, if decisive, one for the French employed commander, and the fact they swept the Imperials after getting defeated in the initial skirmishing doesn't mean you can always count that you won a battle. He came back after regrouping and replanning. This had the side effect of hurting the war effort against Hessen Castle, as troops had to be diverted to deal with the Upper Rhine from former League units who were dealing with the Hessen Castle with Westphalian troops. Bernhard was known for these daring and risky attacks, which were double-edged swords to be fair, but here it paid off for him. The Imperials took nearly 8 times the casualties Bernhard did. Most of them were captured rather than killed. The city was then put to siege and held up for 3 more weeks before they were forced to surrender on March 24th. But even with this victory and pressing people into the army, Bernhard could only get around 12,000 5,000 men, half of them cavalry. He needed more infantry to really put the castles in the region under siege, which Richelieu realized and sent 4,500 men to reinforce him, but nearly 2,000 deserted, fearing they would never come back if they crossed the Rhine. Peter Wilson, the author of my main book, compared this to the ancient Greek perception of the river Styx, which is accurate if they feared death, although this is more from battle and disease and war than generally fearing the god of the dead and death as a concept. But he saw this mass desertion and realized that Bernhard could help eliminate threats in Alsace, sending another 1,900 under the command of veteran leaders, which notably was the French commander Guebriant, I think I'm saying that right. He was notable among these, having worked besides Bernhard in 1636 and volunteered to work with Bernhard this time. He would become a notable French commander till his death later in the war, which would cut short his successful career and was replaced by Turenne, who was skilled in his own right, his fragile constitution more than making up for his skilled mind. Turenne was even one of the only Frenchmen Napoleon would ever consider as a great general. But we will get to these men and others in future years, as the next saga for the French and Bernhard was Brissac, although that will have to wait for next time, as this is all I have planned for this episode. I want to thank you all for listening. Social media links will be in the description box or in the links themselves. You can email me at 3decot@gmail.com. Reminder that I have a Patreon, and thanks to those who support me. Interview and spread the word, and I'll see you guys next time.